Hi Stephen, you have a call today with Tom DeBurn.
Hey everyone, this is Stephen. Thanks for listening to this new episode of my podcast. Today, my guest is Tom DeBruyne, and I had the pleasure to be working together with Tom for more than one decade. We met, I think, in 2008 when we were both discussing the Dove advertising campaigns on Real Beauty. Those were then disrupting back in 2008. And we've been in touch ever since. And Tom is the founder of Sue, which is an agency focusing on behavioral science. He's a consultant in that. He's an expert in that. He's a teacher. He writes about that topic. I can strongly recommend you to follow him on Facebook, where he always shares really insightful ideas. So I'm very, very happy that I can have this conversation here with Tom. Welcome in the show, Tom.
Nice, Dave. I'm glad to be here.
And how's the Corona life at the DeBruyne family?
Well, we have a three-year-old, a hyper excited three-year-old, and I'm running Sue together with my wife Astrid. So I must say in the end it's fun. We try to manage things, and we try to combine I would say navigating both the company through the crisis while navigating a three-year-old through the day. It demands some behavioral change on our side, and some discipline, and some habits. But we're learning rapidly, I must say.
And you live in Amsterdam, right?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, I recognize that. We have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old, two boys, and my wife is playing the teacher during the mornings while I'm, you know, in at work and trying to do some webinars and do this recording. So it's an interesting time, not always easy, but we're also trying to make the best out of it. Yes. I appreciate your knowledge and views on behavioral science. If you look at the Corona crisis right now and what's happening around the world, are you hopeful? Are you optimistic? Are you pessimistic? What's your take right now?
I think we need hope without optimism. The hope is rooted in the idea that every crisis passes, and that the whole economy is incentivized to grow and to perform better in the end. So we always are incentivized to make it work again. However, on the other hand, there will be a tremendous cost. Lots of companies, and healthy companies and exciting companies, probably won't make it because when all the assignments just disappear, there's only cost structure left. So I'm always an optimist. I see opportunity in everything. That's why you become an entrepreneur in the end. So I think that we entrepreneurs, as you are, we're biased. So I see lots of opportunities. I think there will be the cool thing about this crisis is that we are simply thrown into behavioral change. We're thrown into simply having to. We're forced into new habits, and we're forced into trying to make it work. So I think whereas this whole concept of, you know, quote unquote, the new working, or working from home, or being a digital nomad, I think there was always this this creative class on the edges who embraced the idea wholeheartedly. Some freelancers and some digital nomads who just roamed around the world while working wherever they were. But this was a tiny little class, and there's this very, very big group, both of employees as well as managers, who always felt uncomfortable of not having everyone in the office or not being at the office. And I think that they are now simply thrown into a context in which they simply have to make it work. And lots of us are now realizing that if you put a little bit of effort in it, you can actually be successful at it, and you can actually start to experience benefits of it, like the fact that you don't need to sit your day through at the office, you don't need to be in a traffic jam, you don't need to control your employees five times a day. You can actually get shit done while having some time for yourself to eat healthy, go out for a walk or a run, etc., etc. So I think that that's definitely exciting. I also think that we're doing the environment a big favor in terms of climate change. I don't know what the long-term impact of that would be. Might be that after this crisis, we will party like it's 1999 and simply pump some CO2 into the atmosphere to celebrate that we're back in business. But on the other hand, who knows? Who knows? We might actually start to realize that it makes no sense whatsoever to simply sit in a traffic jam every morning and pump obsolete carbon into the atmosphere.
Yeah, I was thinking about exactly that thing. I wrote a blog post about it that I'm going to publish in a few days. Like, are we going to go back once this is done and sit there for 2 hours a day in our car? I mean, we have all the tools that we need to change that. We now have companies that were forced into allowing people to work from home and to do virtual meetings. But from your point of view, what is really needed to make sure that we solve the traffic jam issue, for instance, right now? This is the biggest and a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity we have to reset traffic. What would need to be done to make sure that we don't just fall back in our old habits?
Yeah, that's a good one. I think that it all comes down to, do we have enough time to get people to experience success while they are forced to work from home? And I define success by, are you capable of high performance work? Are you capable of deep work? Are you capable of connecting with your team in such a way that you create high performance output as a team? As a manager, it would be, are you capable of inspiring and triggering your team, you know, to deliver while not sitting at the office and playing all this theater that you're working hard? Because the great companies that have that are used to, you know, distributed teams, they don't give a damn about how much hours you throw at the problem. They are completely outcome driven, and so they manage by outcome. They manage by coordinating efforts and tuning in a couple of times, maybe once a day or once a week, to make sure that everyone has all the tools and all the help and all the, you know, the connections they need to be successful at what they do. And they really don't give a damn if you just throw 2 hours at the problem or not. So I think the answer to your question would be, are we capable of generating these high performance outcomes? Are we capable of figuring out how to do that while being distributed? And if that is the case, then I think this, for a lot of companies, this will become the new default. And what I think will happen is that we will probably, once things open up again, we will probably go back to the office. And the first week that we will be back in the office, we will repeat all the same habits and patterns that we have been repeating right before the crisis, only to discover after 1 week that it's actually completely bonkers. And then people will start to discuss the fact that we need to do it differently.
Yeah. And you think that same philosophy applies to different situations where we could, you know, use this moment to create new habits, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Use this moment, use the tools and use this new context to build new success habits. So if you succeed in having a much better life balance, if you succeed at getting rid of all the stress that is being produced by spending 2 hours per day in traffic jam, if you can overcome your prejudice that you really need a physical contact with your colleagues in order to feel connected with them, if you can get rid of the prejudice that you need to sit next to each other to benefit from each other's brains,
yeah,
then I think we will rapidly realize that this whole sitting together in an office thing really is so 1950.
I agree with that. And if you look at customer behavior, do you expect changes after the crisis, where you think that people will expect different things from organizations?
There's the obvious is that we will even get more used to shopping online, or let's say the last cohort of people who felt a bit uncomfortable about shopping online will now have enough confidence. People yeah. in the 70s and 80s, I see it in my apartment building, they are ferociously shopping online, It's too early yet. When it comes to expectations, I think that the industry and the tech industry really exceeded so much in building our expectations or getting beyond our expectations. I mean, Amazon has forced us, and all these companies that you talk about in your book, they have forced us to get so addicted to mind-boggling expectations about delivery, about quality, mm-hmm. about speed, that these expectations are being shaped more by the industry than by consumers. So right. Another interesting okay. question would be, are consumer preferences going to be changed? And that mm-hmm. I think is too early. I do hope that we are now expecting or experiencing a big surge in connection and feeling connected and taking care of each other, away from individualism, away from individual desire. We are now rediscovering the fact that we humans are deep, that our sense of happiness is completely correlated with being part of something bigger than ourselves. And I would expect that this rediscovery of the value of connectivity and community might change preferences in consumer behavior, but it's way too early to see this play mm-hmm. out. What do you think?
Well, On the one hand, I believe this is the biggest digital training course the world has ever seen. Like you yeah. mentioned, people that never bought online are now doing it. People that were against working from home are now doing it. So those barriers are gone, and I don't think they will come back. Mm-hmm. And people really see what kind of digital tools work and which tools don't work. So I think digital convenience will become some sort of a new minimum. I don't think it will be a differentiator anymore. I think that you will need to have it to stay in business. If you don't have it, that people will just walk away from you. So the new norm. And if I observe consumers and customers and people in general, I see two worries or two concerns or two areas where people, you know, ask questions about. And the first one is their own personal life and their dreams that maybe disappeared because of this crisis. Maybe some people live from paycheck to paycheck, and that's yeah. going to be worse because of this. So their issues will increase. So their worries going to increase. So their personal worries, I think, is one dimension. Second dimension are worries about the planet, healthcare, obviously, but also the economical impact, the tensions between East and West, the impact of technology. So there are a number of global challenges, and it sometimes feels like we're at a crossroad right now that we will have to choose which direction we will take. Mm-hmm. And I think that companies that want to make a difference, of course, they have digital tools that work really well. But I also believe they have to become some sort of a partner in life on the one hand, where they focus more on life journeys of customers rather than customer journeys. So, I mean, not trying to figure out the issues that are wrong with the transaction, but figuring out what are the frustrations that people have in their life and figuring out how you can solve those as an organization. And next to that, for the planet, I see a shift from, you know, in marketing, we used to talk about authenticity, and authenticity was the buzzword in our industry for more than 10 years. I think that will switch to responsibility. You mm-hmm. see how some companies now are taking real responsibility during the crisis, and maybe they're going to feel the impact that has, and maybe they're going to understand that if they continue that once this crisis is over, that may have a positive impact. on both their you know, their employees, the energy in the organization, and the customers. So I think that combination of doing well for clients and understanding their worries, their life, and the worries of the planet, I think that will increase in importance. But I would love to hear your feedback on that.
Yeah, this week I in a column I said something along the lines of, this is really the Woodstock moment of purpose. I'm so disgusted with this whole purpose purpose porn thing, because it has become a marketing gimmick. And as I think to the point that you're making is that there's tremendous opportunity now to rethink how you can create value for people based on a deep understanding of their dreams and their goals and their problems today, and a lot of new problems are coming to the surface, and there's so many fun opportunities to think of. I mean, if you're thinking about people being at home and restaurants are being closed, why don't you organize a live Zoom cooking masterclass with the chef?
Right.
There's so many people with kids having to do their homework. Why don't you do a Zoom master or Zoom homework supervision with a world champion kickboxer, Rico Verhoeven? I mean, there's so much space for creativity if you indeed think from the perspective of the human behind the customer. If you think about what do people need, what do they experience, and what help do they need in order to be successful at what they do, or which help do they need to be successful? So that's absolutely the big challenge, and I would say to all those companies who have been blasting around with this whole purpose porn thing, it's now time to act upon your purpose and to show some commitment to the purpose. And it will be very interesting to see which companies are actually going to do that.
Yeah, I fully agree with you on the purpose thing. It's Simon Sinek did a wonderful job in motivating people to think about their why.
Yeah.
Which is crucial. But if I look to all the purposes, all over the world, they are so replaceable between companies. I mean, you see a purpose of bank A, but it might as well be the purpose of bank D. I mean, there nobody knows, nobody cares, not internally, not externally. So yeah. I'm more and more convinced that they will have to start building a purpose from from the customer's point of view, rather than thinking, what are we going to do to change the world?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Or indeed, that's an interesting one. Which problems, which customer problems are we going to solve?
Yeah.
So I think a while ago, I had a good conversation with someone from Rabobank, a big cooperative bank here in the Netherlands. And they said, and I thought, I really like that. They said, when it comes to the life of the freelancers, we think that they are going to be the lost generation because they... there and with this corona, this will only get worse because they have no steady income. They hop from assignment to assignment. They don't build buffers. Hence, they are not capable of getting a mortgage. They're not capable of knowing when they're going to be able to pay off their mortgage without having to worry about grocery shopping. But they said, we need to think about how we are going to design our offering to prevent the fact that more than 1 million people here in the Netherlands will become this lost generation who won't be able to, build up a stable future for themselves. And I thought, that's awesome. You don't need this purpose as a bank, a big purpose, a big overarching purpose. You need to fight specific problems in the market. You need to put up a fight with those problems and build energy around that. And I always really like that example.
Yeah, I love that. I think that purposes are too fluffy, not actionable. It's just some good entertainment, and then life goes on like nothing ever happened. And we have the PowerPoint slide with the purpose. I love your idea about finding a specific problem for a customer and finding and fighting that 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 problem. I think that is the future, both for life and society. It's also, if you want to change something in society, take a concrete problem and try to, you know, add some value to that. Like we see now in the crisis where some people make hand sanitizers, where companies, you know, are making breathing machines out of snorkeling masks. I mean, that is real value, and that is what people appreciate rather than the fluffy nonsense that you sometimes see and read about purpose. I mean,
absolutely. I just had a call yesterday with the Swinkels family, who owned the Bavaria brand.
Yeah.
They did an amazing job, and they're also deep into, they're family owned. They are being hit hard by the crisis, and yet they simply, you know, redesigned their whole process to make hand sanitizers instead of beer. I thought that's really, there you see who's committed to their committed to creating a better world.
Yeah.
I hope they will be rewarded for that behavior in the long run.
There's the question, of course, what would be needed in an organization so that they keep that mentality once we're 6 months further in time, when there's no real problem anymore that they can solve, and they're trying to reinstall their organization, they want to rebuild their growth. What would be needed to motivate an organization so that they keep on focusing on using their assets to solve concrete problems in the world? What do you think?
Well, that's a very interesting one. Look, to take one step back, in my definition, behavioral change or behavioral design is about creating a context in which specific behaviors are triggered. And so the problem with companies that are on the stock exchange is that their whole behavior is completely triggered by the quarterly results, which means that they simply can't invest in long-term strategies, because they always have to, you know, show these hungry, obsessive shareholders that they are performing well this quarter. And so the example that I just gave of a Swinkels family brewers, they are an independent family-owned company. My company is an independent company. I mean, you work independently.
Yes.
So we have other incentives. We're not only in it for the long run, but we're also in it for creating a meaningful life for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if the goal of the company is to create a healthy company that solves problems for its customers in the long run, while at the same time creating, you know, a meaningful life and a meaningful business for yourself, you're much more capable of doing things that don't have to pay off right away. And so there's this really structural design problem in companies that are listed on the stock exchange, and that requires really the kind of leadership that, for instance, Amazon has, that simply puts a big middle finger onto their shareholders and says, wait for it. And they would go, okay, here's another 10 billion. We trust you that in the end you will simply conquer the world for us.
Yeah. It's going to be really interesting to see how, you know, if companies are in a panic mode, if companies become in a short-term sales push kind of mode, or are they going to build a reputation that helps them to get through this in a meaningful way? I'm very curious to see. And I'm also curious to see if we're going to see new companies and new brands pop up like we had after the 2008 crisis. Suddenly we had Uber and Airbnb, and many of those famous companies, you know, they grew from the ashes of the 2008 crisis. I'm convinced we're going to see new companies this time as well. We just don't know who they are and what they're going to offer as value. But I'm convinced in the next 2-3 years, we're going to see amazing new companies that really add value in a new way to help customers and to help society.
Yeah, let's hope. I think that the problem with Uber and Airbnb was that they were so fueled with cheap money that the whole purpose of the company was to simply create a monopoly in the market and to crush everyone. And that is not a healthy business model, because you only want to create value for your investors and shareholders. And so I think what this crisis could trigger as a behavioral change or as a mindset change is that we need more business model where everyone benefits from the value that is being created. And I'm not sure if this abundance of cheap capital really in the end creates the lasting, you know, the healthy business that where everyone in society benefits from. So mm-hmm. I would say yes, an Uber kind of business model where everyone benefits, that would be awesome.
Yeah. It's I'm very eager to follow those those evolutions.
Do you already see interesting signs or promising promising companies?
No. I see some companies that have been around for a long time or relatively long time that I think that will keep on growing, and then I'm looking like companies like Impossible Foods that has plant-based burgers or plant-based pork. That are really, really good. I tried them many, many times. And if you eat that kind of meat-like meat, it's good for the environment. It's not bad for your personal health. And you still have the meat sensation in your mouth.
Yeah.
You know, those companies are relatively small today. They were in a growth mode before the crisis. I could assume that those kind of companies will see a bright future in the next few years. But they're not completely new. They've been around for a couple of years, but I think they will have an opportunity to build upon this, is my feeling.
Yeah, and that's definitely an interesting market. So I think we would do not only the planet, but also ourselves a big favor if we would, shift more and more to plant-based eating, and what companies like that, plus Beyond Burger, kind of solved, the design problem that they solved was that there was this big prejudice around plant-based food, that it's kind of a compromise on food. You in order to eat plant-based, you have to compromise on flavor and texture. And they kind of said, hell no, it's even better. It's this is not just a hamburger, it goes beyond the hamburger. And so they used brilliant behavioral design thinking to reframe the whole experience on eating plant-based. So there's so much opportunity there to think from a psychological perspective how we could make all kinds of new and pro-social and pro-environmental behaviors become sexy again.
I agree, and I'm very optimistic about that, and I think we're going to see beautiful evolutions there in the next few years. Tom, maybe to round off, I got really inspired by some of the private messages you sent me, but also by your recent Facebook posts. Do you have any advice for people who are listening that are really worried or stressed out by the corona crisis, how they personally could change their behavior to get better through this?
Absolutely. So I would say one of the first of all, you have to realize that in the end we're all gonna die, and to me this is a very liberating
optimistic Tom. Optimistic was the question.
To me, this is one of the key ingredients of my optimisms, is that it kind of makes everything a bit relative, because in the end we're all gonna die anyway. So you have to enjoy every moment that you are alive. You have to enjoy. It's like every time, and I know I got this one from Louis C.K., but Louis C.K. once said, don't you have that every time you sit in a plane and the plane goes up, you go, oh my God, this is fucking amazing. I'm partaking in the miracle of human flight. And I still have, every time I'm in a plane, I'm going, how is this possible that this thing goes up in the air? And I kind of have the same thing with waking up and looking through the window. Oh my God, this is yet another day, yet another blip in the history of the universe, and I can be part of it. So what a simple way for me to train my brain to stay optimistic and excited is priming. So every night I ask myself to think of three exciting positive things that happened today. And that's it. Simply, I, for instance, yesterday I saw the first swallow in the air, and I got completely excited with that. And it's just three things. And if you could sustain that habit, and it's something you should actually do with your partner every night, let's round up the day once we are in bed and think of three amazing things that happened today. You will gradually train your brain to spot spot beauty, spot joy, spot the fun things in life, the good things in life. So that's an important one. A second one is it's such a great time for experimentation. Try out new things, because you don't know in advance what you will like or not, but you will stumble upon things by accident that are actually good fun. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, I stumbled upon this Wim Hof method, the Iceman method,
yeah.
And I do it every morning and then take an ice cold shower, and I discovered that I start to enjoy it and that it affects me in a positive way. So that's a keeper. I'm still struggling with working out every day, so I'm experimenting with all kinds of things, from a 10-minute workout on video to trying to pick up running again. But I haven't figured out the way yet that works for me. But it's a great time to simply set up experiments, expect them to fail, and it doesn't matter, because if you fail, you will only have learned that this particular thing just doesn't work for you. So don't feel sad about failing. You have to experiment your way into discovering fun things. And in the end, this will pass. This all will pass. Every crisis passes. Yeah. We are just too, stuck too deeply into this one to see a bit further ahead.
Yeah. No, look, those are nice motivating words. And as I said, please go ahead and follow Tom on his social channels. It's always really insightful.
Yeah, run LinkedIn, then Facebook. I only do Facebook for people I know.
Yeah, okay. So they all have to go to LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, absolutely.
Do not go to Facebook. It's do the LinkedIn face.
I will block you. I will block.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for your insights. It's always an honor to speak with you. Last time that we did an interview together, it was a video interview. People can still see it on my YouTube channel. I was working on my previous book back then, Customers the Day After Tomorrow. And after our conversation, I was driving home and I had suddenly an idea that ended up in a complete new chapter thanks to your insights. So I'm going to re-listen to our conversation a couple of times, and I'm going to take those insights with me for the new book that I'm working on. It's always a pleasure. I'm very thankful that you made the time to talk to me, and I hope people will enjoy our conversation.
Thanks for having me, Steve. It was an absolute honor.
Thank you. Have a safe rest of your quarantine.
Thank you. You too. Bye.